This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, home of the best-tasting protein powder out there. Check them out at BlackStarLabs.com, and don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order. Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 174. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week is Dr. Jonathan Fass of AcceleratedStrength.com. What's up, John?
What up, Kev?
So you're going to be blogging on AcceleratedStrength.com now?
Yeah, man.
Cool. And we also have Lee Peel of LeePeel.com. What's up, Lee?
What's up, Kev?
How you doing?
Doing good.
Why does this always have to turn into like a Sopranos thing? Do I have to say gabagool?
Gabagool.
Where's my gabagool?
Look, let's keep moving. Come on. We're short on time. Let's roll.
We are short. We got tons of news. The winners for the contest are going to be announced in the show notes. We're actually not going to go through all the names right now. But if you are a winner, go to thefitcast.com, look in the show notes. We're going to have the winners of the TRX gift card, the set of Val slides, and the t-shirt. So, again, we took a couple ways of getting this. And also, we're going to be doing another contest next week. John and I have been talking about it. So, if you miss out this time, we're going to have a bunch more ways to win next week.
Yeah, we're gonna come up with all kinds of fun and exciting ways to interact with the FitCast.
Yes. And along with that, I just have a question for the audience. If you have any kind of video topics that you want me to shoot for thefitcast.com or kevinlarrabee.com, just shoot me an email and let me know, just because I am kind of dry from ideas. I hope you didn't miss – we had like a midweek episode this past week with Jason Ferruccia. If you missed it, go back, check it out. It's episode 173 if you kind of skipped over it because you're only waiting for the Sunday edition. And also a couple of guests that we have coming up. Huge, huge, huge stuff. All right. Todd Durkin is going to be coming on the show, so I need questions for Todd. Send them into questions@thefitcast.com or use the contact page at thefitcast.com. Talked about Todd a lot a couple weeks ago from the Perform Better One-Day Seminar. Phenomenal guy. If you haven't checked out his stuff, definitely check out his website. I believe it's todddurkin.com, and also TD Performance is the name of his facility, I'm pretty sure. Also, Steve Cotter. If you like kettlebells, Steve Cotter is like one of the kettlebell guys now in the industry. If you want to ask any questions about kettlebell training, or also I know he does some MMA stuff. Like this dude I saw first at the Ryan Lee boot camp back in 2006, which was like forever ago. Mm-hmm. And he did like a single-legged squat with two like 24 kilogram kettlebells held over his head, and then he like did a single-legged squat, then from the single-legged squat at the bottom position jumped up onto a friggin table with one leg. Like, this dude is just ridiculous. So if you have any questions for Steve or Todd, please email them in ASAP. The scheduling for their interviews are probably going to be this upcoming week, so the sooner the better. So please take a second, pause the podcast, email us, send them in. Want to quickly talk? I bought some Vibrams yesterday, guys.
Awesome.
I know. I badmouthed these things for like the last year and a half, and I finally bought a pair.
And verdict?
I'm wearing them actually right now as we record. They're pretty cool. I mean, it feels like you're walking in your bare feet. But they're $85, and I had to call around to a ton of places in the Boston area to find these things. They're like sold out everywhere. And I don't know what the verdict is yet. Like, it's really weird because the way these fit, the heel to my big toe is like nice and snug, but my pinky toe and my ring finger toe are kind of short. And they don't go all the way into the foot, the toe, finger thing. So it's I don't know. It's weird, and it was like really hard to get them on because I've noticed like my toes are really compressed, and I don't know if that's something from wearing lots of shoes. And I've always worn like air cushions in my shoes, so it's going to be interesting to see how my body reacts to them. And I went grocery shopping with them on today, and It just happens the very first time I wore them out in public, people already started giving me weird looks. But I was told by a prominent member of Mike Boyle's Strength and Conditioning is that it's a great conversation piece and that women love them. So after he said that, I started calling stores and trying to find a pair. And I'm like, all right, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. All right, deal.
Awesome.
So I jumped on board. I called a bunch of places, and it was actually this very small store called Marathon Sports in Melrose, Mass. That had them. And I think if these are good, I mean, they're $85. Like, they're really expensive, but Nike Freeze are $85, and I was going to have to buy a new pair of Freeze. So I think I'm actually going to buy two pairs of these. I think I'm going to buy one for training in and one for just casual, you know, walking around in. And I don't know. I've high hopes for them. I think they're comfortable. I mean, they're not like I can wear them right now, and I'm just kind of sitting down. They're not like uncomfortable where I have to take them off once I get into the house. And just
slow and steady, just like you would with anything else. You just build into them.
Well, I mean, I think that's. I don't know if I put this question in the outline or not, but it was amazing when I posted about this on Twitter and Facebook, and then there was like an explosion of questions. And one of the questions we got was, I can't find it exactly, but basically, you know, I want to run in Vibrams. Oh, here we go. This is from Chandra Jones. What are some recommendations, if any, for easing into training volume? Don't have them, but have considered them. And one of the things that I said back to her is, like, literally, if you're a runner, this is going to be a huge, huge, huge transition, because you're going from, like, super padded shoes. Like, if you look at, like, Saucony shoes that are very popular, they have tons of padding. I mean, you're going to something that's going to have a lot of impact on your feet. So I would say, like, really, really, really take it slow. Like, I would go half a mile, and if you start having any pain, like, don't be that runner that says, oh, you know, I'm hurt, but I'm going to keep running. You know, don't be that person. Like, if it starts bothering you, if you start feeling any discomfort, stop. You know, wait until the morning, see how your body feels, and kind of go from there. But obviously, I'll keep you guys posted and be able to tell you a lot more once I train in them this week. But I'm going to, the only kind of running I do is like uphill running. I do uphill sprints, and that's it.
Yeah, we used a running progression at Delaware, and off the top of my head, I think it was something like you do a tenth of a mile on a, you know, a jog run, tenth of a mile of a walk. You do that the first day, you take a rest day off in the second day. The third day, if you're not sore or there's no pain, then you can progress to like 2/10 on, 1/10 off. You do that for like half, until you're going half a mile with a tenth walk, and then you start progressing just running full, like to like 3/4 of a mile, then a mile, something like that. I can't think of it exactly off the top of my head, but it's just a clinical progression anyway. It's not anything like evidence based. So people can probably find stuff online that'll be just as valid, because there is no validity to that. Giving you like ease breaking in, but the things that we do know about barefoot running is that it does change the contact point of the foot. So when you run in sneakers, it's a heel contact, and when you run barefoot, it's a midfoot contact. And because of that, then you change all kinds of muscle activity. You see increased posterior chain activity in barefoot or low shotting running. So you've got any more posterior tib activity, more hamstring and glute and stuff like that, which may be a good thing. We don't really know that for certain, but we kind of think that it is. But that also means that you can get a ton of overuse injuries if you're not careful in how you break into these things. So what tends to happen is seasoned runners will switch to barefoot and basically not change their running, and a month later they're in all kinds of agony and they can't even walk. So you have to be really careful with that and kind of ease yourself in, just like you would any other weight, you know, training program. And, you know, if you'd never lifted weights before, or you never lifted free weight before, and then just went in and started one rep maxing and doing all kinds of crap, you'd probably end up hurting yourself. And it's the same thing with barefoot running, so or low shotting running. So just suggestion.
Yeah, great point. And again, I'm literally gonna only be training in them, lifting, and maybe doing some sled work, so nothing too crazy, but I've always had horrible feet. People have made tons of comments on how I always walk on my tiptoes. Like, I have just, I don't know if it's subconscious from my dad telling me never to scuff my feet because I always did that when I was a kid, or from playing basketball and just always walking on my tippy toes. But like I said, I think last week I had badass calves, so it was all worth it. Accountability block, just want to quickly mention that. There's going to be a revamp to that. I emailed a bunch of the FitCast accountability bloggers, and we didn't post this past week, and I think I really don't know what we're going to do about it yet, because I think there's some people that have kind of run the, like, let's put it this way, I only got 4 people that emailed me their blogs this week. So I think, I don't know if it's people being busy or if it's just the end of the rope for those guys. But I think what I might do is I might start taking applicants for a new round, because people literally have sent, you know, when we get mailbag questions like, oh, you're going to be opening up any spots for the accountability blog, and they post in the comments. So I'll have news for you by next week's episode, and we'll have that stuff figured out. And want to quickly mention, we talked about a little bit in the off topic, but John Williams had his first child. So congratulations
wow.
to John and Sarah. Awesome news.
Congrats.
And all I can say is that quinoa chili is awesome. So it reminded me to make that. So
very good. So, yeah, there is a little feedback to your headset. I can hear that.
Is there?
Yeah.
Hmm. All right. Maybe we should listen to that after we record the news. Mm. Like an echoing.
Yeah, it's like a hum, like a...
I don't hear anything. Just for the record.
I have a new headset, so maybe it's my incredibly powerful new headsets.
Yeah?
Maybe it's your face, John. John, you're heading overseas, so...
Yes, sir.
Just want to say best of luck in travels today.
Thank you.
Yes. Be safe.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm pretty damn excited. A little nervous. Should be pretty cool.
Oh, my God. What you're doing is awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, Lee, what's up?
Nothing like what John's doing. I'm just hanging out. New stuff will be up on the blog this week. I'm still doing a lot of stuff about motivation and just taking kind of a break from a lot of the like technical research stuff. And just enjoying doing that. So it's pretty kind of, I guess, a little lay low a couple weeks, as I'm doing some background writing, and makes it easier to focus on those kind of blog posts when I'm doing a lot of background writing. That's about it.
Cool.
And I'm in awe of John's new position.
Yeah, John, I didn't get my new car yet in the mail.
Oh, my bad. I think it's being delivered on the same day as my effing t-shirt.
It's the DeLorean replica, right?
Yeah, it is.
I had an extended conversation with one of my clients about how people like literally they recreate DeLoreans, and they sell them on eBay for like $25,000. I'm like, this is one of my clients who actually has like a pretty big position. I'm like, and there's a chance that things could be taken off. I'm like, okay, if things take off, you know, just remember, if you got some extra money lying around, that DeLorean would look really nice in my parents' garage.
I'll tell you what. Between you, not only you driving up, pulling up in a DeLorean, but getting out with some Vibrams on your feet, your homeboy, the ladies are going to be beating down the door.
Well, it's great because it's made of stainless steel, so it's perfect for time travel and time displacement. All right, well, we're going to take a break. We're going to head into the mailbag. All right, time for the mailbag. The first question that we have is from Alex Europa. And you might remember we brought this up earlier on episode 172. But, Lee, I'm going to throw it to you. My question relates to artificial sweeteners such as stevia, splenda, etc. I've heard that in some individuals, simply introducing the taste of sweetness to the tongue can increase insulin levels in the body through the secretion of incretins. Would it be possible to determine this on the individual level by testing one's blood sugar, then applying, swishing an artificial sweetener to the tongue wait 5 to 10 minutes and testing the blood sugar again to see if there is a drop. Would this be a valid test to determine a person's sensitivity to artificial sweeteners as it retains to insulin? If yes, what are your thoughts on regarding the applicability of this type of test with body composition, competitive or otherwise oriented clients? As always, thanks for the effort you guys put into making such a great podcast. Sincerely, Alex.
I remember seeing, I'm not gonna lie, I haven't like researched this on a large level. I remember looking at it in the past before. From what I remember seeing, it was little relevance to anything whatsoever. I believe there are some, because the thing is, like, sometimes with the research, when they do it on blood sugar levels, they used mixed artificial sweeteners sometimes too, which, like, if you look at something like Splenda, it has dextrose and maltodextrin in it. And that's, I mean, that is going to raise your blood sugar, and it's going to, you know, so I'm going to say that unless you're diabetic or worried about blood sugar levels for any sort of health reason, that you shouldn't even be pondering something like this, and there's really no need to even and bother with it. And if you are having any sort of, like, you know, issues with your health as far as that concerned, then sure, you can test how things react. I believe Cassandra Forsyth was on here one time and said that when she was doing research about one of her studies, that the people went in out of ketosis whenever they use artificial sweeteners. So, you know, I mean, there's obviously a little bit of relevance to that. The exact mechanism, though, you got me. I don't know. And I don't technically know enough about it to say anything that I would say would be basically just sheer quick Googling. So, but I do know enough to know that it's not really going to matter either way on your body composition, especially if you're a healthy individual. You're just going to need, because, you know, that brings up the whole issue of, oh, if I have raised insulin, I can't lose fat. And we've talked about that 1,000 times, and not relevant. You can lose fat. It takes the deficit over time. So yeah, that's my quick answer. Definitely want to get to some of the stuff that John's going to talk about later on before he leaves. So cool. I think that covers it. Yeah.
Do you want to grab the next question from Wes?
Sorry, did not see that. The next one from Wes.
Starts with, hello, gang.
Arr. We'll see. It's fate that I skipped the question. Okay. Hello, gang. I'm resending this question in response to Kevin's statement from the 328 episode that went something like, if we don't get to your questions, please follow up and ask again.
See, look at what's up. Now we're answering it, right?
I do apologize if you answered this and I missed it, but I really tried to listen hard. Beginning in high school, I have always back squatted to bench or box, never asked to grass with a lot of weight. I can go parallel to the bench with 315 for 10 easily. I weigh 170 pounds and have been lifting for 10 years straight. My questions and comments are, am I missing out on something by not going all the way down? My main goal is strength and not so much physique. The bench does feel like a psychological crutch. I think if I didn't have the bench there, I would not even attempt 315 because I've been using the bench now for so long. Will there be something gained in scratching this crutch and going ass the grass with lighter weights? Thanks so much, Wes.
I'm going to answer this possibly a little controversially relative to what usually floats around fitness forums, but I'm going to say probably not. The reason why you squatted to a bench, maybe assuming something. Usually you see like squats to the bench or the box, like in football. And the reason why they don't go full depth squat is typically has to do with a lot of mobility, a lot of soft tissue restriction because the guys are really built up. But the other reason is because it's not functional for a football player. You don't need to drop that low. The stance is not that low. There's no point in a game where you're actually squatting that low. The only time you ever see athletes typically, it doesn't mean one coach won't change it versus another, but typically the only time you see athletes going that low are actually Olympic weightlifters. And the reason why they do that is because for them, functionally, they need to get that low. Most people don't have the flexibility or the need to do it. Now, I do believe that if you should be squatting as low enough for a femur parallel, which is basically the top of the thighs are parallel to the ground, so you're assuring that the bone itself is at least parallel or below parallel to the floor. But that is not a full, you know, quote unquote, ass to grass squat where you're going all the way down as far as humanly possible. I don't think that that's necessary. And there's nothing really indicating that you are missing or missing if you don't do that, or quite frankly that you're not missing if you do. I mean, I don't know, but I would say if you're capable of going lower flexibility wise, you could probably do so safely. You couldn't do it with that kind of weight. You would have to lower the weight a little bit and then work into it. But otherwise, all that means is that you're training a range of motion. And if that range of motion isn't usable to you in a functional way, then it's I don't think that it's as important to train that range. You can do it as long as the flexibility allows, but that's where most people do get hurt simply because they're not really capable of doing the activity, not because of some kind of crazy knee thing or whatever. It has more to do with like back and lumbar flexibility and hip flexibility. But otherwise, I mean, 315 at a body weight of 170 is pretty damn decent for 10 reps. So I don't think you're doing anything wrong. So you can decide for yourself if you think that's something you want to pursue, but I don't think you're missing out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just go to – stop going to a bench and go to a lower box.
Yeah.
You know, there's 12-inch box out there. I mean, you can even build one yourself if you're, you know, half decent with power tools. Sorry, I watched Step Brothers the other night. Dale, using power tools. No power tools. But you can use power tools because you're not a man boy. All right, the next question that we have, again, I'm going to throw it to you, John. Hey, guys, good, expletive of choice show. Been listening for about a month, just catching up on all the past episodes. My question pertains to a friend of mine, and by friend of mine, I mean, of course, me.
No.
I thought he was just going to be like my super hot girlfriend.
That was so funny.
When doing a standard pull-up, overhand, pronated grip, I seem to elevate faster on my right side, my left shoulder visibly below my right. Any ideas on how to fix this problem? Thanks from Chris.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think he said – I'm still looking for that damn question, but I'd read it before. I think that you can do things like pull-ups to build up muscle hypertrophy. And then what that's called is transmutation. So you take a muscle that you've developed and now you use that inherent strength of the muscle towards another activity. So you can do that. What I suspect the problem is, though, is that it's a compensatory strategy that you've built in. You may not – I mean, obviously, you're not symmetrical. There's something going on right side versus left side. But what I'm suspecting is that your entire form may be a little bit off kilter, or you may be using your arms may be in different position one versus the other, and that you're not actually stabilizing your scapula when you're doing your pull up, because that can absolutely then mean that you're leading with one side and then you're a little weaker on the other side because you're not actually doing the same thing on both arms. I think what I would probably recommend is probably going to eccentric training first. It's kind of similar to what we had recommended, I think, last week or the week before, where you're trying to build up more pull-ups by using eccentrics, or you can also use like jump bands and things like that. But what you would want to do is really just over-focus on the weaker side and let that side kind of lead the movement. Make sure everything is stabilized. Make sure your abs are tight. Make sure your shoulder blades are squeezed back and down so that and they're symmetrical and they feel symmetrical. A better idea is to have someone actually look at you and keep their hands on your shoulder blades so that not only can they tell you whether or not something's going on there, but that you can have some tactile feedback. But that's all that I would really recommend. You can do one arm like lat pull downs. You can even do one arm pull ups if you have like a Gravitron machine, and those can be pretty helpful too. But you do want to eventually train the actual movement that you're having difficulty with, and usually it's just a matter of putting extra attention and care into what seems to be going wrong to make it work better.
Next question that we have, I'm going to shoot to Lee, and it bounces back from a episode that we had a couple weeks ago with Nick Tumanello and Ally McKee. And the question is from, I'm guessing that's Lee. Just another spelling of Lee. Okay.
That's Leah. That's how you say Leah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So your name's not Leah.
No, it's not.
Or Lepel.
No.
Lepel.com. People check it out. I bought it. I haven't. No, I'm just kidding. I have a super long commute, and I recently started to download your podcast for listening in the car. I wanted to thank you because I was. I'm really enjoying them and learned a lot. I just listened to the interview with Allie McKee, and I checked out her blog as well, where she describes her figure training in more detail. I was struck by how intense the training seemed for a fat loss stage and was curious about the deficit a person could handle while performing that type of training. She didn't go into a whole lot of detail about diet on her blog, I assume because she has a diet coach who doesn't want to publicize everything. I was curious what your thoughts are about what is an appropriate deficit to support this type of training but still lose body fat. Thanks, Leah.
I'm not personally familiar with the complete workout schedule of this person, but I mean the question basically is it's a general question, like how hard can you go in a deficit with your training? And the short answer is it depends on really how each individual achieves a certain level of training, conditioning, and metabolic adaptation, and how they respond to the diet. I think the best way I could probably go into this is if you look at it very logically about what your body can take, and how well you can adjust to it. Like, for example, let's say that you're someone who, maybe you have a higher increased level of metabolic adaptation, and this doesn't even necessarily mean anything to the relevance of your leanness, because a lot of time we look at things like, okay, well, the more overweight you are, the more you can take an extreme deficit, or perhaps you know more extreme levels of training at a time. That's not always necessarily the case. Just because you're a big boy or big girl doesn't mean that you're going to be able to drop it at an extremely fast rate with no negative repercussions or metabolic adaptation. I find that size doesn't necessarily equal level of intensity that you can take in the deficit. I find more so that it's just like this individual read. So, you could be an individual like that who maybe has a little bit of a faster metabolic adaptation, and you could say to yourself, okay, I want to go hardcore. I want to do full out, I'm going to do intervals, and I'm going to try and do, metabolic circuits. I'm going to throw everything I have in my box at the fat loss, and I'm going to keep to low carb and high protein, moderate fat intake, a couple liquid meals. And like, you're really like, you're trying to do like your absolute worst in damage. Well, if you're one person who responds well to that, then great. You can do that. You can go balls to the walls, and you may not have a lot of negative repercussions to it, and you can get it done, so to speak. But if you're another person, you may find that you're going to have a very quick metabolic, adaptation to that, conditioning adaptations, and basically it's not as if that you will not lose fat. It's just going to be blunted at a certain race. You're going to adapt to the situation a lot quicker, and you're not going to come out of that until you have a slight deconditioning phase and a refeed break. So if you look at it in that kind of scenario, maybe you can go hard, really hard, 2 or 3 weeks, but you're going to have to break a lot sooner than other people are, and for longer, and decondition a little bit. So it could mean that, your 3 weeks on will take a 7 to 10 day break to get you back to starting point. If you looked at it like, okay, well, I could lose like 3 pounds a week, right? And you go to, and you say to yourself, all right, 3 pounds in 3 weeks. That's about 9 pounds. You do your break and deconditioning, you're going to gain at least a pound of fat back, probably with like the refeed. I need so probably as well to do that, giving you about 8 pounds of pushing hard and doing everything that you could possibly do within an inch of your life. And so you basically got about 8 pounds of fat loss in a month with an extreme conditioning build that's going to make it a little bit harder for you to achieve burn overall. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but athletes, and the more conditioned you get, the harder it is for you to kind of create a burn situation. So you go into a month and you have like maybe 8 pounds of fat loss, and that's with pushing it and everything you've got. Where if you look at the other scenario and you go just a little less aggressive, if you're someone who has a little bit of a metabolic adaptation, you could go for 2 pounds a week, maybe being a little less aggressive in the training, a little less aggressive in the diet, you still hit an 8 pound overall, and you're not going to have to push your conditioning as hard, or you can progress in your conditioning a little bit longer and get a bit of a better burn without so much intense impact. It's what I consider, you know, walking until you need to jog, jog until you need to run. And, you know, I find that for the majority of people that I work with, that's the kind of level they need to work at. As much as we have those inner rocky montages and we want to be able to, you know, carry a log over our head, and slam tires and all that stuff. And it works for some people. Yeah, it works great for some people. But I find that it's a little bit more of an outlier situation of those who can do that and stick to a really aggressive and regimented diet at the same time and not have extreme metabolic adaptation to where they're having to train really hard, for 2 hours a day at a point to get on a sort of level burn, which they could possibly achieve with doing just what they need to do. So I guess my point is you need to apply it to your situation. And you need to really examine what it is that your need is and what the overall long haul it is that you have to achieve your loss and how you adapt to diet. If you find that, you know, you have good losses in the beginning and then they really stunt and stall a couple weeks in, then you could have a more higher metabolic adaptation and simply do, shorter bursts of refeeds. Maybe don't take the training and the diet so intense and you can end up getting there faster or at the same rate with working less hard. So, yeah, that's my answer.
That was hot.
Thank you. Okay. Am I supposed to read something? Because there's a bunch of...
I think, John, we're going to send you off.
Oh. Yeah, unless there's a quick question. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I don't think we got anything else for you specifically, so...
Yep. I got a biz ounce.
All right, well, John, thanks so much for spending a couple time with us on this Easter morning, and hopefully you have a safe flight, and... get out there all right, and people will finally accept that this is not a joke. You're actually moving out of the country.
I am actually moving out of the country. Yep.
Well, thank you for spending some time with us, and like I said, best of luck where you're going, and we'll definitely figure out something to get you on the show.
Yeah,
yeah, I'll get on at like 3 o'clock in the morning for you, John Fast.
I won't.
Yo.
I'll like wake up at 3 o'clock and I'll start recording and then you guys can talk and then I'm gonna go back to bed. I'll just click the button and be like, all right guys, I'm going back to bed. Actually, I'm gonna take go to the bathroom, then I'm gonna go to bed because I usually go to the bathroom at 3 a.m. All right, John. Well, we're gonna. Anything you want to say to the audience before you leave?
No.
Good night, Delaware.
Good night, Delaware. Oh yeah. Good night, Delaware. Yeah. So we'll get in touch. We'll figure something out. What times and whatever works for everybody.
All right. If you have internet on the plane, we'll do a Skype call, and you can call me from the plane.
That's dope. I wonder if I do.
You probably do.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It's 2010.
Right. Yeah. Well, I know that they have them. I just don't know what. I'm not spending $10 a minute to talk to you, Kev. I like you, but not that much.
All right, John, I'm going to hang up on you now.
Later, guys.
All right.
Bye,
actually,
John.
You get to hang up, John, because I can't.
Sweet. I'm never hanging up.
All right, then you're never going to leave.
It's like the beginning of like when you start dating someone and they're like, oh, I'm not going to hang up. No, you hang up.
No, I can hang up now.
No, you hang up, baby.
John, I'm
you hang
in.
Up. Bye, oh, my John. God. Oh, my God. No, you hang up.
All right.
Oh, you-
I did.
That,
there he is. He told me to hang up.
I hope he dumps you now, Jack.
All right.
Pat,
hey.
I'm up him.
Hey, Lee, we got some more mailbag, but we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be right back.
Better take a break.
All right, we're back with a mailbag minus John Fast. He's actually over the Mid-Atlantic right now, going to an undisclosed country. Top secret job. He's actually joining MI6. He's going to have his own secretary named Moneypenny.
Moneypenny. You're the Moneypenny.
Sounds like such a dirty name.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does indeed.
which Bond is that? Is that the Connery Bond?
Is that
Roger Moore?
It's Southern white female Bond. That's what that is. married a modern printer.
That sounds like John dude peeking through your windows, James Bond.
I can sing any voice like known to man, but I cannot talk a voice. Like, I can't do it. Any voices when I talk. So I leave that to John. That's John. I'll do the singing one so you can do the talking ones.
All right, now you're super quiet.
Damn it. Did I fade out?
Yeah, that's all right. Hey, do you want to grab the question from the person?
That person.
Actually, you know what? I'll grab this one really quick. It's from David in Belfast. He says, top of the morning to you. Great show last week. I really enjoyed it. You really got the energy of the seminar across, Kevin. Maybe it was a spike. Once a week, I train two friends, Des and Jason, at the local leisure center. I can't get them past 2 to 3 reps on the assisted pull-up machine without any assistance yet. I've been trying for years. After 2 sets, they need to use the assistance. I've tried getting them to do sets of 1 rep for a few weeks, but that did not help. After pull-ups, we use the Smith machine lying under the bar, body horizontal, pulling up so chest hits the bar. They can do 7 reps of this. Usually they do 6 or 7 reps. I think he's thinking of inverted row.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, with decreasing reps until they can't do any more. They only do pull-ups once a week. I told them they need to do them more often. Any suggestions on how to get up their total more use of the lat pull-down machine, maybe? Whew, excuse me. No pull-up bar or bands available. Okay, so how are you doing pull-ups?
Wait, yeah, that's what I...
Oh, he's gotten a pull-up machine. That's it. All right.
Like a Gravitron? Gravitron. Wow. Whatever, keep going.
No, that's right.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's
okay, has compressor. See, I don't have one at my gym. I mean, I've, you know.
Yeah,
I just
used to have one at my college. All right, so first, David, we actually did hit on this in episode 169 where we talked a lot about this and ways of getting those reps up, and including we discussed a blog post that Lee wrote a couple weeks back. If you go to episode 169, I'll link to that blog post, and also, again, we have a pretty long discussion, so I don't want to just move past your answer, but I would say go back there. If you have any more questions, just email us, and we will hit on them. That's what's up. Lee, do you mind asking me the question from Anthony? I hate delegating, but...
I do not mind asking you. What up, guys? I meant to write the VI email first, then leave a separate comment on the Fitcast site. In my haste to get an entry for the raffle, I screwed up the order. I've been listening for about 40 episodes now, and all you guys have really helped me along in my training and reaching my fitness goals. Over the holidays, I picked up both a TRX and a set of owl slides for myself. My question regards the difference between the two. For exercises that have both a TRX and a valve side variation, such as a mountain climber or atomic push-up or hamstring curls, is there an appreciable difference performing them on the TRX versus the valve slide when it comes to factors such as core activation or muscle isolation? Or does it vary from exercise to exercise? Thanks in advance, Anthony.
All right, Anthony, the great question, two great pieces of equipment, and since you already have them, I'm not going to let you win those in the raffle. So.
See, Anthony.
Why did you do that, Anthony? I'm just
kidding. Should have kept your mouth shut.
I'm just kidding. No, maybe if we do draw your name, we'll make sure to just send you a T-shirt, or I have a half-full bag of 50% salted Trader Joe almonds on my desk that I will...
Ooh.
Those are
Kevin Germs.
Those are game used almonds. If anyone collects baseball cards, how they put like game used jersey on your card, or like get you a game used baseball bat. Those are actual almonds that I use to eat professionally. So, great question. And again, when we look at these things, great piece of equipment, great ways to train at home. So if you haven't checked them out, I really recommend that you do. But with the TRX, you got to keep in mind that a lot of the times that you're going to be suspended, a lot of things that you're going to do on them would fall under the category of suspension training. With the valve slides, you're still on the ground, obviously. So you don't have that added component of suspension where if you even think about doing – I mean, this is a simple example, but it won't bring the point completely across, but doing a plank with your feet in the TRX straps or doing a plank with your feet in the valve slides. Obviously, the valve slides aren't moving. You're not doing much. When you bring in mountain climbers, again, kind of just take that to the next extreme where you're going to have those legs suspended, so it takes an extra component of stability when you look at that. So I really think they're both great ways of doing things like mountain climbers. In terms of doing atomic push-ups, you can't really do those on the valve slides. I guess you can if you just do kind of do like a double mountain climber and then go into a push-up, but that's something that's much more suited for the TRX. And also, with the hamstring curls, again, I would look at the TRX as a progression to the valve slides. And again, this is kind of up for debate because it really depends on the individual. Like, I'll have one person that can do the leg curls on the valve slides or on a slide board, and it'll be much easier for them to do it on that than on the TRX, and also vice versa. Like, one of the key things that we have to look out for when we're doing those leg curls is still activating those glutes. Otherwise, yeah, you'll see some clients who have, you know, weak cores or they just haven't been training in a while, that back's going to kick in there and be like, yeah, I'm feeling it in my back. Yeah, exactly. That's not supposed to be happening. You mentioned when it comes to factors such as core activation or muscle isolation, I would say you want more core activation, look at the TRX, and for many things, I would look at the TRX as a progression from the valve slides. But again, it depends. They're both looked at as just variations. Like, you just use them, you know, you don't want to do the same exercise, you know, forever. So you can use it as just something to mix things up and maybe give yourself a little bit of a challenge. And I doing push-ups on the valve slides, I think you can, they're great for doing Spider-Man push-ups. Trying to modify the atomic push-up to be done on valve slides, I don't think makes a lot of sense because it was really something that is suitable for the TRX. So I wouldn't try to shoehorn any of the exercises into a different piece of equipment unless it's you only have one or the other and you want to try to play around with it. Like, I'm all for that. But again, just think about, you know, a couple of those things and play around with it. But I think the TRX is fantastic. I really think that if I couldn't train in a gym ever again, if as long as I had kettlebells, a TRX, and some valve slides, I would never have a problem and I would never be in poor shape. And I think that hopefully that's something you're getting a lot of use of. Lee, do you have anything to add to that? I'm rambling.
No. If you're trying, you know, it's a little bit of a weird question. So, you know, like in a sense of they're just so two different pieces of equipment. But if you're trying to combine the two, you know, there are some great things. Like, you can do a backwards lunge with the valve slides and the TRX. You know, that can be like a nice little additive. I like to do a lot of shoulder work, getting like a you know, prone position on the TRX and you know, do some slide outs with my arms. You know, you can get a lot out of that. You know, I mean, so there's definitely ways that you can mix the two. But like complete subbing, you know, I just kind of see how it feels. You know, definitely play around with it. But I mean, I love the devices, and I think that me and you, I think we have very similar training things. And like, I love my suspension trainers and I get a big kick out of using them. So, anytime I can throw in variations or add a little bit of a challenge, that, you know, I'm all for it. So definitely see what you can do. But yeah, the atomic push-up thing, yeah, it's just not, yeah, at all.
I got some breaking news.
Well, what's the breaking news?
My one of my clients, who I won't say his name, but he's a baseball player, high school baseball player who's a junior in high school, just sent me an email. Yesterday, he had his very first game of the season, and he went 3-for-4 with a home run and 2 RBIs.
Nice. Congratulations.
No, the kid is just turned into a beast.
Powerhouse, huh?
Well, I told him, like, dude, I want a home run per game. Like, he's just fantastic. He's like, right now, he's like, oh, man, I'm losing weight, so I want to come in. And he's like, I want to come in 2 nights a week at around 7 o'clock. Like, this is a kid who has a full boatload of schoolwork, and he's still setting the time, the dedication to come in and do some in-season training twice a week, which is
awesome.
Really cool. Man, I love that kid.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I won't say, again, I won't say his name, but he hasn't listened to the show, so it doesn't matter. He did find half-naked pictures of me on the internet, though. Destination Abs, that's what's up.
Hot?
Yeah.
So maybe not for him, but for me, hot?
Yeah. That's actually, Lee talked me into the whole thing just so she could get... and that, what was that full nude picture? What was that for?
Like I've said, you know, there's muscular distortions that I can only see certain angles without clothing. It's a professional thing, you know? Awesome. I'm in a different level than New York, Kevin.
I got
you. And I know these things. So okay. you just don't worry about that.
All right, I'll accept that. We got a cool question from, I think I'm saying this correct, yeah, I think it's Anya.
Anya, that's what I was thinking.
Awesome.
I was thinking it was Anya.
All right, Lee, I get a question with Racha. All right. I'm a 25-year-old American girl living in Finland for the time being. She also bought a t-shirt. What's up? I graduated from college with a degree in psychology in 2007, and immediately following graduation, I moved overseas with my husband rather than continuing school for a graduate degree in counseling. When I moved overseas, I decided to begin taking courses and certifications in the health and fitness-related fields. I've always been interested in helping people, and I've always been a fitness enthusiast and an athletic person. Since beginning my studies, I've completed the NASM Certified Personal Trainer, the AFPA Nutrition and Wellness Consultant Certification, as well as the NASM Corrective Exercise Specialization Certification, etc., which editor's note... I think I talked about like a year ago how I was going to get that, but since I didn't stay at Boston Sports Club, I never ended up getting it. I'm not able to work while I'm living overseas, and the language barrier makes it difficult to find people I can work with, so I've been really spending all my time reading articles, taking certifications, reading books, the Lou Schuler books, Alan Cosgrove, Tom Fernudo, et cetera, et cetera. Studying anatomy, et cetera. My husband thinks I'm obsessive. I'm really just having so much of an interest and desire to learn more that at times, the more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know. What is your advice to me to continue learning and to prepare myself to start working? The hardest part is that I haven't had much experience with actual training other people that aren't my friends or family. What can I read to help me in planning programs? Are there any seminars in the Midwest I can attend? In the summer, I live in North Dakota. Might as well live in the middle of nowhere. You might as well live in Delaware. I've been working at a local gym there as well. Do new trainers attend these seminars as well? In my distant future 10-year plan, I want to open a gym that offers more semi-personal training in kettlebell, bodyweight, etc. that you guys all speak of so often on the FitCast. My town doesn't have anything like that aside from the university that is located in my town. What can I read to help me learn more about the style of workouts? Obviously, she's been checking out some of Cosgrove stuff. Sorry if this is long and rambling, but I have been listening to the podcast for 3 weeks now, slowly making my way through all the old episodes. I've been hesitant to write in just because I don't want to ask questions that have already been answered. By the way, I listened to the episode yesterday where Kevin says he has trouble with his public speaking because he is staring at a blank wall, and Lee's remedy was to set up stuffed animals with... Did we talk about this?
Yes, we did, and it was very funny. It was very funny.
Little dumbbells and... Oh, okay, no, I do remember this. You were making fun of me. I was laughing out loud while doing my stretching in the gym. Happens often while tuning in. Thanks for the entertainment and info, Anya.
That was awesome. Wow, that's epic reading.
Thanks. I had some...
great question. Basically to summarize, how can I learn more? Like, how can I get more advanced and further myself into what I'm doing? So, a few suggestions. Alan Cosgrove and Rachel Cosgrove, they do, these mentorship programs. And it's through Results Fitness, I believe. And I know that there's a lot of trainers that travel from overseas and in various places. And I know that they do them throughout the year, I believe maybe two times. The exact details, I'm not 100% sure. But I know of trainers who have gone through that and done that, gotten some great hands-on experience, and to help them with both their business and how they train people. I think that it costs a decent penny, but You know, you're not going to find much better information on how to run a business or how to run trainees or do your thing, if you will, if not from like those guys. I think that you'll probably get a lot of really good information from them. And it's just one setup that I'm aware of that does that. So you could certainly look into something like that. And maybe when you come back into the States, you know, you could head from Dakota to out there in California and run through that program. I believe it's like, I don't know, somewhere between, you know, a couple of days to a week, something like that. The exact details for me are hazy, but something to look into. There are seminars everywhere, and it's not even just big name seminars. I go to stuff all the time, you know, in my local area. It doesn't have anything to do with, you know, not that there's anything wrong with Perform Better or things like that, but you know, they're not always big, huge traveling things. Sometimes it's just some local guy who's really good at what he does. And I go and I learn something from him. And, you know, there's colleges. There's always something to be learned there. You can't read enough. You can't look up enough stuff. Find, you know, you're already on the right track. You know, you're reading books. You're listening to shows like this one. You're finding out the people that he is. You need to know. My biggest thing that there really is to do from this point, other than get more involved with you know, seminars and talking to people and maybe some sort of mentorship or things like that, is you've got to stop being paralyzed by your analysis of your ability and dive in and just start working with people. It doesn't even have to be for cost. It can be for free. It's what I did in the beginning. I just truckloaded myself with anyone I could get my hands on and recorded every bit of the experience I could possibly record. And I just kept doing it over and over, day in and day out, so that I could have experience with as many types of people as I could, and just never turned anyone down, and just did it. And eventually I started to realize what my weaknesses were, what my strengths were, where I needed to focus more. I never stopped learning. I'll learn something new today that I didn't know yesterday, and I'll keep doing that until the end of time about everything. Never stop educating. But basically, like, I think I find a lot that, and it's hard for my personality, because my personality is very like, I'm just gonna do it. Like, that's just kind of my attitude. But I find that a lot of people, you know, in maybe your type of position, are like, oh, well, I don't want to do something when I'm not ready. And it's like, yeah, maybe releasing a product and trying to have people take you on as an authority. You know, if you're not ready to do something like that, yeah, maybe not. Back off until you're really secure in something like that. But working with people, if you have the care and the concern to get even moderately educated, I mean, even reading, and I think this is true, even reading a Lou Schuler book probably puts you above like 90% of the personal training category. It's sad, but it's true. And in my personal opinion, most people who dive into just this material as it is are probably better than most personal trainers that are out there, because we have a very narrow scope when we're in this kind of zone, talking to Kevin and people like Eric Cressy and people like Mike Boyle and John and all them, like, that they're very dedicated to what they do. They don't want to be wrong. They want to try and take as much care as they can to know the details of things. Not normal. Not in a mean way, but not normal.
Quick aside. Mike, in our staff meeting this past week, was talking about at this seminar where someone brought up, and this is like years ago, someone brought up transverse abdominis, and they're like, oh, how does this exercise, you know, affect that? You know, some random question in the middle of a seminar. And he was like, he was kind of stumped, because at that time, you know, transverse abdominis wasn't like the hot new hotness. Like, it was something that he actually looked up in Grey's Anatomy, and there was literally two lines about it. And what he did was he then went home, he printed out every single study he could find on it, read himself up, and to make sure the next time someone asked that question,
he'd know exactly what to say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, you got to kind of have that mentality. Sorry, continue.
No, and that's my exact mentality too. Like, someone asked me something, and that, like for example, that beginning question about how the how it's going to interact and the release and everything of the artificial sweeteners and the tongue. I will know about that by the next time we do the show, because I don't feel that my answer was sufficient enough. you know, like I'm not completely happy with the level of my answer, and I didn't have time to quote unquote study for this show like I normally do. Like sometimes I have to look up things. And sometimes you just forget things. I mean, this is a lot of stuff we take in. I'm in my 20s. Like I forget things. Like sometimes I have to relook stuff back up too, you know, but I will know. I will know now. When we're done, I will go and I'll look that up. And I, that's a certain kind of mentality, and it's an attitude. And you have to have that, in my opinion, if you want to stand out from the crowd. Because most people are perfectly fine with saying, oh, you know, here's this card with these exercises on it. You go do the machines and you eat some protein afterwards and you'll be good. And that's enough for them. You know, that's enough for them. They look good. They get through their day, and that's all they need. You don't want to be that. You're already going to be ahead of the pack. So, yeah, I just don't be afraid to get your hands in, because you may not be ready. And just ask whoever you can ask. Have anyone be your guinea pig whatsoever. And that's my advice. But, yeah, Kevin, anything you want to add?
A couple of things I'm going to toss in there. And one of the things that you really need to keep into account is that you're going to be working with the public. And obviously, I don't know you personally, Anya. But, you know, some people are just naturally, they're people persons. Like they have that EQ, they have that energy to them that is just kind of addictive. You'll see those people around a lot. Like it's almost like it's a confidence. It's a you know, it's something where they get along with everyone. They attract a crowd, kind of a thing. And it kind of reminds me. It goes back to, oddly enough, one of the relationship questions that Lee got on our podcast for that person that might be on the bigger side, but they have so much confidence that it's so attractive. You know, it's you remember that, Lee?
Oh yeah. No, I mean, it's your je ne sais quoi, you know, it's your attitude.
Mojo.
It is your demeanor, and it's important. And I fake it until you make it.
Yeah.
Sometimes too, you know, you've got to have that big personality.
Exactly. And I think, you know, part of the fitness stuff, to get the books on fitness and nutrition is awesome. And, you know, to help with that, if everyone needs help with it, but you should have like required reading, like How to Win Friends and Influence People. Like that should
be. Great point.
Yeah. Order that now. It's like 10 bucks. And I think it will help you a lot because you're more or less going to be looking at trying to pick up clients, keeping clients, and you would like to make it like you're making friends and creating relationships out of this. And I'm not saying that in a negative way. You're not lying to people. I'm saying that you have to be a friendly person. You have to be someone that someone's not going to be like, oh, damn, I have to meet with that, you know, person right now, and all they're going to be doing is, you know, why am I going to my trainer and they're complaining to me about their day all the time? Like, why? Oh God, I just can't stand it. I just want to train and get out of there. Like that should never, ever, ever.
Oh God,
be
no.
The situation.
Never happen. No, you know, and you know what? So I have a weird required reading recommendation, but I really think that it's kind of relevant. But The Game by Neil Strauss.
Yeah.
I think, you know, or oddly enough, like if you can kind of get in the mind, because mastering the ability of moving small talk into meaningful conversation is so important when you're a trainer. It's so important. And it's not about lying. It's about being authentic. It's about being authentic. And usually our authenticity is hindered by our insecurities. It's hindered by our lack of confidence, and the real us does not come out. You know, it's not about being a fake you. It's about getting out of your own way to be the best of you. And sometimes having a little bit of not a gag, so to speak, but having like a box of tricks up your sleeve of how to talk to people and interact with people when you're not used to doing so can help you kind of get in there a little bit. Watch a couple seasons of Pickup Artists. Yeah. That'll show you how to start walking up and talking to people. Because I mean, seriously, so many trainers, and they're like, I don't know how to just go up and talk to people. You just got to do it. You just got to go up and you got to talk to people. You got to get in there. Can't be afraid. So yeah, good points on the book, Kevin. We should run a mentorship.
You want to go through that paperwork?
Yeah, no, not really. Let's keep going. Yeah.
I got a $45 check back from my taxes, and I don't even know where the hell that is right now. I don't know how I would ever do that, put together a mentorship.
Yeah, no. Okay. Let's see. Next question.
Yeah, I like the one from Carl Morris because it's all the way from Australia, as he puts it.
Okay, all the way from Australia. Well, this one's for you and me now since John's gone.
Yeah.
Exactly. So let's do it. Good day, boys and gal. I wish I could do an accent. I'm Sue to begin my personal trainer's course, and I would like to work with overweight kids once I become certified. Kids in Australia seem to be losing the battle of the bulge at a pretty rapid rate. I'm just wondering what sort of research I can do to help me prepare for training sessions with kid. I don't want to be one of those personal trainers that get certified and think they are a genius and start yelling at kids to run harder or tell them they are hopeless and fat. Those people really piss me off. Me too. Any suggestion on what to start reading up on and watching for me to get prepared for those things? Also, I would like to be in close consultation with parents to help shift their attitudes towards on what they're feeding their kids and how to set up good examples for their children to eat healthy. So I'm looking to gain knowledge. So any questions on how parents, any questions the parents throw at me, I can answer with firm confidence and fact. Do you guys think that's a good idea, or should I concentrate on helping kids understand the importance of healthy eating? Thanks, Teep, for the podcast. I've only been listening to a few weeks, but I've downloaded the shit out of previous episodes. You know what? It flew, and it's what he wrote. Also, I've told my friends and family about the podcast, and for them to hop on and subscribe and support. Many thanks, Carl, all the way from Australia.
You know, we have the biggest listenership per capita in Australia.
Yeah, I got a lot of Australian listeners too.
Like, what?
I get a lot of Aussies. It's awesome. I'm happy about it.
But yeah, we got a email from someone who's like 10 people, like a group of 10 people that train at a gym all listen to the podcast, and they actually met each other. They're like, oh, what are you listening? Like, this, like one, someone saw one of them laughing, like, oh, what are you listening to? And like, the pick, I was like, no way, I listened to that too. That's nuts.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Nuts. This is a pretty cool question. I like this question quite a bit, and I'll hit a little bit on the training aspect of things. I'm going to have Lee tackle a lot of the nutrition and the training stuff. But this is super obvious. But you got to make sure no matter what you do with the kids that you make it fun. You'll see. You don't throw in an age range, but I'm guessing you're going to be dealing with kids all the way to down to age 10. I'm just going to throw that out there. But they're going to be dealing with groups. You're going to be dealing with kids. You're going to be dealing with some kids that aren't going to want to move. So you're going to have to make sure that you kind of not entice them to move, but you give them something that looks interesting enough that it's going to be worth the physical activity. And I feel horrible saying that, but if you have a bunch of kids do something like, what's a horrible thing, like hopscotch or something? And guys aren't going to want to do hopscotch, and
damn, hopscotch is going to send them right back to the candy bars.
Yeah, exactly. Or what if it's like foursquare, and there's one kid that's just sick at foursquare, and whenever he gets into the foursquare, he puts in these rules that are just perfect for him, but screw everyone else. And then the principal comes along, and the principal just starts kicking everyone's ass. And like, how is that fair? And how did that guy not get fired?
I am thinking that we are reliving some repressed psychological issues from your childhood, Kevin.
Mr. Billings, go to hell. That's all I have to say.
There it is.
He got fired, so it's all good. But he made me cry twice. Twice.
I don't like him at all.
No, me neither. But the anyways, in terms of preparing, you got to make sure you have some kind of not kind of lesson plans, but you got to have some plans set up for activities for the kids. You got to make sure that you do mix it up. So if some group of kids might not like one activity, but they might like the other. So make sure to mix it up. If you're dealing with younger kids, you have to keep them moving. You can't spend time setting other stuff up. They're going to get uninterested. They're going to get bored. And even thinking about rotating stations, we had this, and I'm going to really try to find this, the Titleist, of all people, had a great little printout that Anthony Reyna sent to Mike, and it was all on training kids that were under the – it was on strengthcoach.com. It was like training kids like age 8 to 13. And what they had them do, like they set up a bunch of stations, and they would have like some kids doing med ball stuff, some kids doing bodyweight stuff, some kids doing some competitive stuff, and you would kind of just have them keep moving throughout the group, like almost like warm-up stations. And they found that that worked really effective. It kept the kids moving and kept them interested. They didn't get bored with one thing. And, you know, they found they had great results with it. So I thought that was really cool. And I'll see if I can find that, and I'll throw a link for it up on there. And, Lee, I'm going to have you take the rest of it as I search for that.
Yeah, I was just about to say stations, like that was like the first thing, because not, I mean, it's true for adults too, by large fact that you give adults stations and they end up getting less bored and getting more activity as well. But as far as an education source, let me throw out Brian Grasso, because he's kind of like the king of like training kids. And he does like a lot of research and he looks at a lot of things with kids. So that might be a source that you're going to be really interested in following. It's G-R-A-S-S-O, Brian Grasso. Really good guy for source about stuff and kids like that, just to throw that out there. But I've worked with kids. I've worked with overweight kids and I've worked with their parents. And I'm going to be honest, like it's really, really good if you can get them in a group. Meaning where like if you can kind of find yourself when you get into a position to where you're working with a group of kids versus kind of working just one-on-one with a kid and their parents, because it seems as if that once you enter into the one-on-one, or at least I have found, and this is just personal experience, and when you enter in the one-on-one zone with kids and their parents, that the parents' opinions and the interference of the parents becomes a lot more. Because you're not just training one person, you're training three, at least. And, you know, parents a lot of times want to kind of just, not to say they just want to drop their kid off and say, fix my kid, and I'm going to pick them up and, you know, we'll continue on their life. But I think usually kids get overweight in the first place because of not necessarily a neglect of their parents, but a lack of knowledge of what the right thing to do is from the parents. And it's one of those things where the next thing that happens, their kid ends up in a position and they're like, oh no, you know, what it is do I do? And they don't realize that the kid ended up there in the first place and that adjustments do usually need to be made at home. That it can't always be as simple as just getting the kid to move more. I find talking with the kid about nutrition, keep it very simple. You don't want to have the kid develop any sort of issues. You don't usually want the kid thinking too much about things. The less that it can get technical with the kid, the better. The more that it's just fun and they're having a good time and they're training and they're moving more and they're just seeing a benefit from activity and moving more and doing fun things, the better. With the parents, you know, that's where you might want to have a conversation. It's like, look, you know, try and keep some of these things out of the house. You know, try and do your best to make your kids food instead of picking up the fast food. I'm not talking about dramatic things, but just making those simple small points can, you know, bring home to the parents how to make small adjustments to where, you know, their kid isn't going and training and then they go to the McDonald's afterwards and, you know, it might end up being a moot point if the kid, you know, keeps on overeating food and they think, oh, I can eat even more now just because I'm training, and the parents think so as well. So make small recommendations, things like that, to the parents, and, you know, obviously tell the kid, you know, try to make healthy choices when you can, and but, you know, don't go too far. I find, you know, just keeping it simple like that, keep it fun. Other than that, kids are, they see right through you. You have to just be real and have a great time and just keep it fun all the time. I mean, it's just keep it fun all the time because they will get bored. They will get bored like in an instant. So it is about keeping it fun and stations. I totally agree, Kevin. I think that the stations thing is great for kids because kids don't want to do like, oh, let's do a set of, I've seen some trainers like have the kids like run through, like they'll do like sets on the machines or they'll do sets like, you know, they'll start doing like chest presses. And it's just not necessary for like the young kids like that, that are just trying to just get moving, you know. But yeah, that's my advice.
I was able to pull up the article, and if you're on strengthcoach.com, it's titled Titleist Performance Institute Cyclone Circuit, and the way they do it is the kids are paired up in a two kids per station and rotate every 5 to 7 minutes from station to station. There's a 5 to 15 minute group warm up before the class begins. It is set up for golf, but we kind of looked at it as, you know, how, I mean, we're just kind of throwing around the meeting, you know, what would we do in terms of setting this up if we ever worked with younger kids? But, you know, they'll have one station that's just set up for striking the golf ball, one station that's set up for agilities, one setup that's set up for some kind of overhead or med ball throwing, something that's set up for balance, something that's set up for kicking, a push-pull station, a catching, jumping, locomotion, visualization, awareness, core strength, and a rotation, which I think is really cool. And hopefully, I don't know if this is available for free on the internet as well, but it's another reason to sign up at strengthcoach.com, if you're, especially if you're in the field already.
More.
All right, Lee, we're going to end it there.
All right.
And nice. We had a couple other questions, but the thing... Actually, you know what? I can answer this one really, really quickly, and I'm going to ask myself... Whoops. Didn't mean to do that. Just deleted something. Actually, never mind. I changed my mind.
Oh, okay.
Flip up.
And yep. You can do that, because you're Kevin Larrabee.
Yep. Living in my mom's house.
I don't think you needed to put that in.
No, that's all right.
A little bit of an overture.
People know. I gotta pee really bad, so we're going to leave that in. And
nice. All righty.
We're going to wrap it up. So if you haven't already, make sure you looked at the show notes for this episode so you know if you won or not. And if you did win, email me so I can email, or I can mail you or email you in terms of the gift card. Or
mail you.
Product, yeah, I'll send you some stuff. And if you didn't win, there's gonna be another way to win on next week's show. We'll have the details for that. And don't forget to please go on iTunes, subscribe through iTunes, submit a review on iTunes. You can also go to thefitcast.com and kevinlarrabee.com, submit comments on there, check out the very cool stuff that's going on. And also don't forget to check out Lee's stuff at leepeel.com and the Ask Lee podcast on iTunes. Subscribe to that and order some t-shirts. Order some t-shirts. Please order some t-shirts. Take care and we'll see you next week. Go Red Sox and
good night, Delaware.
Do that for John. See you next week, guys.
All right, go pee.
All right, we're in the off-topic discussion for episode 174, Kevin, John, and Lee. I'm going to start off this week saying that I have consumed a lot of media. One of the things is I started watching Arrested Development. I'm about 10 episodes in. I've never seen the show before.
Oh, it's a good show.
It's a really, really good show.
Really good show.
That's about all I'll say about that. But two movies that I just recently watched. I watched Sherlock Holmes last night.
Good movie.
Yeah, pretty all right. And then right after that, Paranormal Activity. Not
Yeah, it was uncomfortable to watch, but I wouldn't classify it as being actually scary.
Well, the bad part is that I'm not like trying to blow smoke up my ass, but I could like literally call out the shots of what was going to happen. Like it was so obvious.
Can one blow out smoke up their own ass?
With a pump, yes.
Okay, very good.
You have to. It's assisted.
You need a reach around device.
Correct. John, I guess you didn't get your t-shirt in time, so that's
no. It's all right. It's all good in the hood.
Oh, no, you're not going to get your shirt before you leave out.
Yeah, ship off, yeah. Okay. Ship off
tonight.
You're going
to wear it on the plane so you could get some advertising.
No, you know what? I'm being honest here. I'm going full out like pants with, a whole suit. I'm flying business class. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to look the part.
Good for you, John.
Yeah, good for everybody.
John, did I tell you beat God of War 3 last week? That was pretty good.
Oh, sweet. I knew you were playing it. I didn't know you beat it.
No, you know what? I've been playing a lot of...
The banjo?
And what I mean a lot of, I mean like maybe about an hour. The old NES has been getting a lot of play. I bought some new, more games for it, unfortunately.
I wasn't listening to anything you just said.
That's all right.
I was playing the banjo.
I don't think I even care what I just said.
Cool.
But they do.
Lee, what you been up to?
Yeah, what's up, Lee?
Let's see. This weekend, I have done some cuddling and watching of natural disaster movies and action films. It has been fun.
Oh, does this mean? I mean, then I guess our thing is done with, huh?
You know, we're on.
I just got that.
We're on a break, Kevin. We're on a break. Mm. Yeah, but yeah, I saw 2012, and I still don't know how I feel about it.
Are you scared that the world's gonna end now?
No. I hate it. I hate it in action movies. Like, it's kind of movies like, you know, that like almost every character has to die, you know, because it's like one of those natural disaster movies. It's just like they decide at what point they're gonna do so. And I was really disappointed with like the way the characters died. You know, like, there was only one really good dramatic one with, like, a giant wave, you know, or whatever. Like, the rest were just, I don't know, it just seemed like a cop-out. I love John Cusack. I mean, I have, like, such a crush on him. So, like, I'll watch, like, anything with him in it. But I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it yet. Jury shot. And then I watched Transporter 3, which you'll appreciate.
About damn time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, that was good. I liked it. Because it's Jason Statham. What? That's, what do you need more, maybe?
That's just not fair. I mean, you can't... John Cusack, that was probably the last person I ever want to think about having sex. You know, like, any of his movies.
I have... You know, at one, I'm a woman, okay? And we work different, okay? Mm. We just do.
Your plumbing is different. I learned that in school.
I know, but it's like...
It's true. I have a hole. You have...
Okay.
A protruding object. Non.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Key and lock.
Those are, you know, whatever. But no, John Cusack, it's an aura with that man. I mean, if you are born and you watch Say Anything as a young teenage girl, like, it you're just destined to have
like
a thing for him.
6 years old, though.
Oh my God, I can't even talk to you right now. Let's just move on.
I thought I had something else. I've been watching Celebrity Apprentice. I didn't end up watching it last week.
I watched that too.
Wait. Yep. Dude, Sinbad's such a butt face.
You know, I didn't see that coming. I don't know. I love the dramatic ending music of Celebrity Apprentice. In fact, I just watch it for the very last.
I like
last
the music too.
Right, like just that last dramatic part of the music when they're like walking through like the
boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, and they go out to the car, like dun, 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 dun. Like that's like the whole show. In fact, there's no point for anyone even watch the show, just to watch the person get fired, walk out the building and walk to the car. That's it. That's all you need the show for.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I bought a new HD camera. New car.
Oh yeah.
What are you film with your HD camera?
Stuff at Boyle's.
Mm.
Nothing.
Mm. Yeah, okay.
I bought a new HD like camera, but it's really like an actual camera, not a video camera.
See, that's not good.
Yeah. Well, it shoots video.
So it's a camera that can shoot video.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It's one of those Panasonics that I can drop from like 5 feet and go swimming with it.
Aren't you guys going to get an iPad?
No.
I want one. I don't usually get all like gaga over gadgets, but I kind of want one.
It all depends. I'm not getting the first gen. I'm going to wait to see what they release after the fact and see if I can actually use it. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, like now I'm suddenly becoming this Mac person, which drives me crazy, but... I don't know, but it just doesn't seem to be like terribly usable for the stuff that you would actually want to carry that thing around for.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, I think it's something that I really shouldn't buy, but you know, I know
you're
if anyone wants to send one for free, feel free to email me kevin@theguest.com and I'll send you my address.
Mm. You'll get a t-shirt.
I'll send you back a t-shirt. That's a fair deal. And I'll even sign it. I'll put in a free set of I'll put in a free copy of Virtua Tennis for the Sega Dreamcast.
Wow.
Think about that.
That's worth its weight in gold.
You guys aren't getting any feedback from me, are you? From my mic?
I'm not.
Skype's saying that there's something coming through my mic, but I don't know.
Well.
Whoops, we lost John.
I was about to say, something just happened.
John just died.
Bye, John. So sad.
I'll add him back on really quickly. All right, I don't think I got... Oh, John's not online. That's not good.
Oh. I don't know.
Well, that's not good. I don't know, Lee. I don't think I have anything else.
Oh, wait, we're still recording.
Yeah, we're still recording.
No, yeah, I don't have anything else either. Are we going to see if we can get John back?
I've been trying to add him. He's not.
He's not leaving, is he? The show? Because I see so long John and outline, and I'm getting upset.
He is kind of leaving the show.
It's not
funny. Oh, actually, this isn't off topic. I'm going to talk about it on the show, but original host of the FitCast, John Williams, just had his first baby.
I know. I saw via Facebook. Congratulations to John Williams. Yes, that is that one in Cassandra Forsyth.
Yeah. Well,
just had her baby as well.
Multiple FitCast babies.
Just baby all over the place. Congratulations to everyone.
Baby all over the place.
I don't know. I'm so not.
Do you need a spike leg? Do you want me to know you some?
Yes. Please do.
Seriously?
Yeah. Tell you what, email me a spike, and the next time we do a show, I'll drink it on the air.
Oh, yes.
I get really affected by caffeine. Like, I'm the kind of person that doesn't need to drink or do anything, because I'm just naturally can already do that myself if I want to. So you give me a substance of stimulants and I will be out there.
Well, it makes me feel good. Like every time I think or I'll start talking about Spike, I've gotten 4 people onto regular use of on Spike at Mike Bowles Strength and Conditioning. I want like commission for this from BioTest, because
you're the pusher man, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I've gotten people started, like, but the bad part is like they'll always be like, "Oh, do you have Spike?" And I'm like, "Oh man, I can't charge you money for it." Of course, I always keep like at least 2 spikes on the car, 2 spikes in the gym bag, and 2 spikes on the backpack.
Are you still getting like you do you get them for free?
No, I pay for them.
You pay for them because they're expensive, aren't they?
You go look at my T-Nation site.
Are you there. Like level 25
I'm
or something?
Level 4. It's like I spent like thousands of dollars on BioTest Spike.
Oh my god.
Probably an awesome metabolic chat.
John's back, I think. Yeah.
I don't see him. He's not showing up on my... I'll try to add him. See if we can add him and then record the show. Johnny back.
Yes. You know what? Like, if that happens again, I'm just going to... Like, I'm going to turn on my PC because the MacBook's been dropping out.
I wouldn't blame it on the Mac. They usually tend to have better wireless cards.
Don't blame it on
cards.
The Mac.
Yeah,
don't,
that's
don't
what
ever
I assume.
Blame anything on the Mac.
That's what just, I assume, too.
Might have a defective Mac.
I don't know.
Can't return that show. Let's go overseas.
Well,
whoops. Yeah. Ow, my chest hurts. That's
John. Good. John, yeah. Kevin, you're leaving the show.
John, Kevin's what?
Kevin said you're leaving the show.
I'm not leaving the show.
Fuck you, Kevin.
Whoa.
You know what? You can beep this out. Fuck you.
I'm not
beep
bleeping
it out.
Anything out. Off topic is not censored. People know that.
Yeah, well, don't say that John's leaving. I got all sad because I read in the thingy, you know, he sent us a little news thingy and what we're talking about. It says, "So long, John." And I was like, oh, he's not leaving, is he?
Well, I mean,
and
he's leaving the United States.
He said, actually, he is leaving the show, Lee. So you didn't say stage jackass.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. We're going to have to change the scheduling of the show.
Sad gray face that you sent me earlier, John. Now I have one.
It's a very accurate face.
This might make us have to do video conferencing so we can see John's face.
Mm.
Maybe I'll get back on spending some time and trying to make that work.
Yeah, let's go through that again.
Yeah.
Wait, it's working. No, oh, it's not working now. Can you hear us? No, oh, you can't hear us.
Wait,
what?
Kevin got all excited. makes the announcements before either any of us even know what the hell's going on, and then it all went to shite.
No inside baseball, by the way. Red Sox are going to kick Yankees' ass.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. We'll see about that, Boston boy.
Go down to the Jersey Shore, John. Go get a tan and go do about 20 to 30 minutes of abs before you warm up.
It's an hour. You got to be in the gym for at least an hour because I'm there for an hour and a half.
An hour, hour and a half?
An hour. An hour and a half.
You got to have your protein.
That was almost...
Your hair gel.
That became almost like fat guy smoking a cigar.
See, I was thinking it sounded more like... oh, man, what's his name? It's an actor. And whatever, ruined it, forget it, move on.
I think they're going to Florida. They're going to Florida this time, by the way, the Jersey Shore kids.
Oh, really?
I've heard rumors, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Good for them.
Yeah.
All right, can we record some show?
Yeah, I'm trying. Let's go.
Damn, Kev. Come on, E. I'm going to start calling you E.
Yo, oh. E.
Come on, E. Yo, E. How's Sloan?
Dude, Sloan's awesome, man.
Sloan. I love Sloan.
Dude, I can't wait for Entourage.
We were watching the third season last night. And you know the episodes where he has the three-way with Sloan's friend?
All right, I'm going to stop recording now.
No, come on, dude. And I was just making comment because the other girl, the friend, Sloan's friend, is what's her name from The Watchmen?
Oh, she's the daughter from The Watchmen?
Yeah, that was the friend.
I might have to watch that tonight now.
Yeah, that's the friend, that Sloan's friend. But it's funny because if you remember the episode, E gets like all attracted to her and then doesn't know what to do about it. And I was like, you know, yes, she's very attractive, but the fact of the matter is, like, compared to Sloan, Sloan's a 10. I mean, she's like an 8 or a 7 at best.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen Watchmen?
Yeah, dude, I've seen Watchmen.
All right, we're going to record the show.
Sloan, for the win.